1340WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
Welcome to the program. Apologize, no show yesterday. We had some technical issues. And sorry that it didn't work out. But what you missed was an opportunity to talk about an incredible senior night. And it was one of the most memorable I've ever had, really. And for 25 years of them, I think rate this, if not at the top, it's right there. Big night for Jeffrey Moss. That was sensational. But when you take the number two seed, the team that is the co-champion in your division, and beat them by 24 points, and they were down. They were pinned from the outset. They made one little minor run, and that was really about it. But Moss was sensational, as were the rest of the racers. But honestly, the cherry on top was Taryn Gilmore. Taryn hasn't played a lot this year. He's dealt with a couple of different health issues. Nothing of a serious nature, but enough that's really affected what he's been able to do for the team. And honestly, I'm not sure how much he would have contributed had he been perfectly healthy. But the one thing that Pep gives you all the time is everything he has. Everything he has every day. Good kid. His teammates love him, as I believe was evidenced by the reaction he got. And the racer fans, you talk about appreciating a guy who hasn't really contributed a lot in terms of the scores and the rebounds, but they know what he's meant to the team in terms of a practice body and of a guy who carried himself the way you want a racer to carry themselves. You know, just be a good person, be kind, and be a good teammate, be a good student, be a good citizen. And Pep has done those things. And the fact that he ends his career, his final shot of his final regular season game, with a go on the other side and lay it up and in, the place went nuts. I'm telling you, with that size crowd, that's probably the loudest I've ever heard. Now, that's not taking those sellout crowds from a few years back in the 2012 season. But I'm telling you, it was amazing. It was stunning how loud they got. And the reaction from the teammates, I've watched that clip over and over again. I talked with Matt McMahon last night at the coach's show, and he said the same thing. It really was terrific. Well, it's a great springboard towards the OVC tournament, which I'm about to talk about, but I do want to tell you that, hang on, Josh Planos, he's normally my guest on Tuesday, and Josh will be along with another show in just a few minutes. But we're going to talk about the tournament. Josh has some interesting things. I mean, if you've watched Stephon Curry, Steph Curry's been amazing, to say the very least, but he's putting up numbers that if you didn't have the video evidence to back it up, you'd think they were made up. And Josh goes into a little bit of that, just ridiculous stuff. We'll post the links to his articles as well, along with the post of this show. So be sure and check those out. Some really interesting stuff, not just that, but a couple of others. All right, let's get to the Ohio Valley Conference tournament. And today we will be en route. The team is leaving today. They'll get 20 minutes on the Municipal Auditorium floor tomorrow, and then they play tomorrow night. Now, the women's team also will be playing tomorrow, and I'll have more on that in just a bit. But let's take a look at the tournament, the pairings for this week. And coming up tomorrow night, Tennessee Tech and Austin Peay meet in the 5-8 game. And it's amazing to see the kind of year that Tech has had. Tennessee Tech, 19 wins, 10 losses, 11-5 in their league, tied for second. They're the fifth seed. The fifth seed in the tournament. Austin Peay comes in as the number 8 seed. They barely got in, but they got in. I'm really happy with that. Good to see Dave loosen the bunch in the tournament. Murray State and Eastern Illinois will follow in the 6-7 game. The Racers, despite a down year, still finished 16-13, their 29th consecutive winning season, and tied Tennessee Martin for the West Division title at 10-6. But it's been an up and down year, and last week basically a microcosm of the season with a really poor game against Eastern Illinois, and then a terrific game, perhaps one of the best, if not the best of the season, against Tennessee Martin. And how a team can 180 like that is, your guess is as good as mine. I don't know how, but they do. That's why fans are apprehensive this week. I think every fan knows this team is good enough to go down there and win 4 straight games. They are. They've beaten the 3 teams in their bracket, and I believe they can win on Saturday if they get there. And I think fans also know that this team, the Jekyll and Hyde nature of it, we could be here Thursday morning talking about next year. It's just the reality of the situation. I don't believe that's what will happen, but I don't think it would be stunning if it did happen. People would go, I can't imagine it. They maybe couldn't have predicted it, but it could happen. I mean, it's an Eastern Illinois team that just defeated the Racers by double digits last week. They were terrific. Give most of the credit to them because they were really fabulous offensively. They did a good job defensively on Wayne Langston. It was just a night when Jeffrey Moss wasn't shooting the way he had been. Got right back on track, though, Saturday. And Justin Seymour didn't make shots. You know, everyone deserves a piece of the blame. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. You know, just a night. Players are going to have bad nights, and we just had a few that had them. And Eastern Illinois picked a night to be terrific. But the Racers have to do a better job against Trey Anderson. Anderson is really kind of a matchup nightmare because of what he can do. Not much of a three-point shooter, but just what he does with an inside guy and the moves that he has. Demetrius McReynolds, a good addition. But let's be honest, they'll win this game based on what Cornell Johnson does. If he has a good game, Eastern Illinois, especially if he has a great game, they'll likely win it. If he has a good game, it'll be difficult for the Racers to win. But if they control him like they have three of the four meetings in his career, the Racers have a great shot at taking care of business. Casey Tison is a player they got to watch in the corner. He's a three-point shooter. Now, Luke Petrowski's been dealing with a sore ankle, didn't play much against the Racers. He has some size issues, but to be honest, once he went out of the game, that's when Eastern Illinois did their best. He is a big guy, but he's slower, and EIU played smaller players, and they were able to take advantage of that against Wayne Langston. That'll be a key matchup when these teams meet on Wednesday night. The Racers come in 16-13, 10-6 in the league, and Eastern Illinois 13-16, 9-7 in OVC play. Jay Spoonhour in his fourth season against Matt McMahon. The Racers, will they have Chad Culbreth back? Will they be able to add a body? Maybe. He did practice yesterday, did more than he's done, so I would rate him as questionable. That's not Matt McMahon, he never said this, but I would rate him as questionable for Wednesday. There is a chance if the team goes on that he could see some playing time, even if it's a minute or two, but he did a little bit more. And Taron Gilmore, Matt said he may play him a little bit. You know, he's Taron did a little rebounding, a little bit of defense. Might be a guy that can help out should the Racers get in a spot where they need to rest a player here or there. But Matt said he's going at this tournament like it's their only game. And if you take a look at the Yahoo schedule, it's their only game. So he's right. It says Eastern Illinois. There's nobody under that. So to get another one, they have to win one. And that's the mindset that they'll go with. They won't worry about what if we got to rest somebody. We need to play these guys tonight because what about tomorrow? There is no tomorrow night. That's not how you play it. Coaches don't coach that way. We think that way as fans sometimes and broadcasters, but not coaches and not players if they want to advance very far. If the Racers are fortunate enough to win, they get the Morehead State game on Thursday night at 8. Before that, Tennessee State would play the winner of tomorrow night's first game. And then Friday, Belmont is in the upper half of the bracket. They would get the winner between Tennessee State, Austin Peay, and Tennessee Tech. And UT Martin gets the winner between Morehead State, Eastern Illinois, and Murray State. Now, that game is an 8:30 game. Friday's games will be on ESPNU, the previous games on the OVC Digital Network. And then Friday night's winners will meet in the 5 p.m. championship game Saturday, which will be broadcast on ESPN2. Now, the women will play. It's a noon tip-off on Wednesday. Noon tip-off. Quentin Taylor will have the call for you. 11:45 is the airtime, and that will be on 1340 WNBS. 1340 WNBS. Again, Quentin Taylor will have the call for that one. All right, that's got you caught up with the Ohio Valley Conference Tournament. Let's get you caught up with a few other things. The girls' first region tournament getting underway last night at the CFSB Center. Danielle Wagner gets 14 points to help Graves County bounce back from 10 down to beat Marshall County 44-33, and Mackenzie Blackford scored 18 points to lead McCracken County past Fulton County 57-21. The action continues tonight. Tillman and Carlisle at 6, Murray High and Mayfield at 7:30. Travis Turner with the call for you this evening at 5:30. Over in the second region, Lyon County, a really terrific season, but it's over as Hopkins Central defeated Lyon County 64-57 and Henderson County downed Christian County 66-46. Murray State men's golf, they shot a 293 yesterday after an opening round 286 at the Loyola Intercollegiate in Goodyear, Arizona. Murray State sits in ninth place in a field of 16 teams with a 579. Murray's own Brock Simmons surging to the front of Murray State players with a second round 2 under par 70. After a 75 in the first round, he sits in 34th at 145. So does Duncan McCormick. Preston French right behind them at 146. Arkansas State is the leader in that event at 560. So the Racers 19 off the pace. Got a chance to see a little bit of Murray State baseball this weekend and watched Brandon Gutzler get one big hit, and then he walked, and then he was hit by a pitch. That's what happened in his final two at-bats Sunday. But Gutzler is the Adidas OVC Player of the Week, and he's the Louisville Slugger Collegiate Baseball National Player of the Week. How good do you got to get a National Player of the Week award in baseball? Listen to these numbers. 571 with 8 extra base hits, including 5 homers, 22 runs batted in. This is a week. 10 runs, 690 on base percentage, 1429 slugging percentage, and the Racers win 4 of 5 games. Gutzler's now recorded a hit in all 8 of Murray State's games this season and returns to action Wednesday, the Racers do, when Lindenwood comes to Reagan Field for a 3 p.m. contest. Congratulations to former Murray State offensive lineman Kamali Matthews. He signs a contract to play on the offensive line with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in the CFL. And the Southeastern Conference fining Vanderbilt $100,000 for storming the court after their win against Kentucky Saturday. It's their second violation. A third would bring a $250,000 penalty. Speaking of Kentucky, the Cats slipped from 16th to 22nd in the latest AP poll, which is now headed by Kansas. Louisville held steady at number 11. Kentucky will play at Florida tonight. As promised, Josh Planos will be my guest. We'll chat with Josh right after this.
Join Racer Athletics for an action-packed weekend. First, the Racer baseball team begins a 4-game homestand against Northern Illinois. Then, Racer basketball returns to the CFSB Center on Saturday for Senior Night with the women's game at 5, followed by the men's game at 7 p.m. against the Skyhawks of UT Martin. Come out and help us celebrate our Murray State seniors. You won't look back at the games you watched from the couch. For tickets, call 270-809-3000 or visit goracers.com.
To the program. As promised, Josh Planos is my guest. Josh, in reading articles, very few times in anything you've written would I think, oh, obviously he made a typo. There's no way that's true. But in reading the Stephen Curry article, I almost went back and checked. I knew you had checked and double-checked, but his last 10 game stats in the article that you've written in the Washington Post, you cite that it's like it's something somebody made up to impress someone. Unbelievably, it's 100% real. Tell us a little bit about that article on Steph Curry.
Well, I think anybody who watched the Thunder just kind of collapse in the waning moments of their loss to the Warriors could tell you that was probably the best game of the season. And, you know, just top to bottom, I think it really showed what both teams are really capable of and how quickly Steph Curry can just, you know, turn it on. And, you know, what he did in that game was incredible. He came back from an ankle injury, something that he has, you know, previously experienced that, you know, honestly dropped his draft stock when he was coming out of, you know, Davidson. Comes back from an ankle injury in the third quarter to actually improve his shooting and score 31 of his 46 points. And, you know, over the last 10 games, that's really been kind of par for the course. He's averaging 38.2 points, 6.7 three-pointers, on a highly efficient rating, and he's really doing it all. And he's running away with the MVP award in February, which is not something that you know, you can say about a lot of players over the past decade at least. And he's just making the game seem so effortless out there, really. And it's truly, it feels like it's an honor to watch him play at this point.
Yet there are some who believe at least maybe a little bit of the numbers because of poor defense, and I'm sure maybe that plays a factor. But, you know, I've watched it too. It seems to be more of Curry than it does poor defense most of the time.
Oh, sure. I mean, Oscar Robertson, I don't think anybody can dispute, you know, what his credentials are. He's, you know, a Hall of Famer, probably one of the best, you know, one of the best 30 or 40 players to ever play the game. But when he says that, you know, NBA coaches don't know how to play defense nowadays, I think he's coming from an era where there weren't nearly as many fouls that were being called. I mean, there was no hand-checking policy. You know, the game has really adapted to be beyond the arc. And, you know, when he says the teams need to be picking Curry up full court, you know, that was, you know, showcased by the Orlando Magic. Victor Oladipo picked him up, you know, if not from the inbound, then from half court, mm-hmm. the entire game. And it really didn't make a difference because now what makes Curry, you know, that much more of a threat is he's as efficient when he gets to the rim as DeAndre Jordan is. And DeAndre Jordan's, you know, the most efficient player in the league in terms of, you know, field goal percentage. Basically all of his shot attempts are dunks. And now Curry, you know, if you want to guard him up close, you leave yourself susceptible to him cutting back door or finding cutters himself. I mentioned in the article that he's dishing out more than 7 assists a game with these incredible, you know, video game-like numbers in the scoring column. So, you know, he finds another way to beat you, and there's no one way to play him. I think we've seen time and time again that, you know, it's not like this league doesn't know that he's a very talented offensive player, that he's the best player on the planet right now, and they're, you know, game planning specific for him. But, you know, still these numbers are being produced, and, you know, there's a reason, because there isn't one way to guard him. There isn't really much that defenses are doing incorrectly. It's more that he's just the superstar talent that's really just making it happen in a scheme that, you know, on a team, really, that's probably going to end up being the best regular season team of all time.
And yet there's not that game down the road where you can go, or that it's happened even already, that you go, well, wait till he goes up against fill in the blank. He'll stop him. There isn't anyone, is there?
No. I mean, I think they have another matchup with Oklahoma City. I want to say it's this week. But, you know, outside of Oklahoma City and San Antonio, I really don't see any team that can even remotely match up with them. And obviously they've lost, you know, lesser teams, but they've only lost once at full strength with everybody healthy. And, you know, we've seen that the Thunder haven't been able to, you know, kind of keep this death lineup when they move Draymond Green to center, hasn't been able to keep them in check. And, you know, I looked at my roommate when we were watching the Thunder game this last weekend, and I said with 4 minutes left, I think that the Warriors were going to win, and they were down by, you know, 10 points.
Right.
And sure enough, it's just so hard to keep them toned down for, you know, all 48 minutes. It seems like, you know, one blown gasket and the whole game is lost. And that was really the case with Curry getting hot when the team needed him most. Klay Thompson, you know, hit his first three-pointer with under 5 minutes remaining and then proceeded to, you know, score a ton of points. They have so many threats at so many positions. They're the deepest team in the league. And right now, you know, if the Thunder are going to be the team that's going to match up best with them, they're simply not going to be able to hold their own serve when it comes to a 7-game series. And I think unless something changes, you know, whether it be by attrition or what have you, you know, the Warriors are really going to waltz their way to another NBA championship.
And younger players, when I say younger, I mean little guys. I'm here in Murray, Kentucky. I mean, that's thousands of miles away from where he plays. And I see Curry jerseys and things like that everywhere. I mean, he is just a sensational star, not just from people who appreciate the game, you know, at our level and professionally, but from little guys who watch and go, oh, I want to do that for a living. It's amazing the ripple effect that it has from merchandising to TV viewership to everything.
I mean, I would say he's probably the most marketable athlete right now. I mean, he comes from you know, a religious background, a strong moral compass. You know, he's involved in nothing but Nets, an organization that gives life-saving bed nets to, you know, countries in Africa in order to help prevent the spread of malaria. You know, he's endorsed by technology companies, by, you know, Express, fashion, you know, a retailer that really mm-hmm. doesn't fit a lot of professional athletes. But, you know, obviously he does because he doesn't look like he'd be, you know, the typical or the prototypical professional athlete. You know, he's sponsored by everybody, and that's for a reason because, you know, everybody seems to love him. And I thought Steve Kerr made a really good point after the Thunder game. I think the big difference, these are his words, between him and Jordan is that Jordan played with a lot of anger and seemed to be getting all of his frustrations out on the court. And you see that a little bit with LeBron, too, with how, you know, violent some of his celebrations might come off as. But with Curry, it's almost purely because of joy that he's playing. And, you know, he looks like a kid on a tricycle out there. Seemingly every night, and you know, the way he's carving up these defenses and making it look so easy, it's no wonder that more kids don't want to, you know, grow up and be just like him.
Well, in other NBA news, it's good news, bad news for the Knicks. I saw the article about better than last year, but they're still not any good. But at least they've made a little progress. They've had a coaching change. Has that helped them any, Josh?
You know, I think we've seen some improvements in certain areas. I think that they're finding the shots that they're looking for. More so than they were under Fisher. It often felt like they were just kind of lost under Fisher's guidance, at least on the offensive end. Defensively, I feel like they've always been, you know, doing a pretty good job this season. But, you know, offensively, they're at least competing. You know, they took Miami real close the other night. You know, they've won a few games since the All-Star break. I think this team is much improved, certainly from last season. And that was kind of the point of the article, was that if you look at net rating, which is, you know, the difference between points allowed and points scored per 100 possessions, you can kind of get a sense of where a team is matching up over the course of a season. And this season they've improved the most of any team in the league. And while that's, you know, incremental progress, especially for a team that kind of always feels as though it needs to be involved in the postseason because of its history, you know, I think the team just has a few more hurdles that it needs to cross in order to be, you know, really competitive at a high level. And right now they're taking baby steps, but at the same time, you know, I really wouldn't be surprised if they went after Thibodeau in the offseason. I know Kurt Rambis is probably enjoying this opportunity, but should the team not win, you know, at least 5-10 more games, I have to feel like they're going to cut ties with him and move in a different direction.
Interesting. That was going to be my next question. Would they remove that interim tag? And it seems you don't believe they probably will do that. They'd have to get really hot for that to happen, right?
Oh, sure. I mean, right now they're just not even sniffing the playoff picture. And, you know, when you're in the Eastern Conference, it's not really acceptable, especially for Phil Jackson. I mean, Phil Jackson's never been one to kind of bide his time and just wait and, you know, see how the process works out. I think he knows that he's trying to, you know, create a championship level team right now, and, you know, to not even have those young players, you know, take that next step and get into the playoffs and experience what that's like. I think that's going to be an opportunity for him to, you know, downsize and kind of move the team in a new direction, find a new identity, because right now what's working is just not working well enough.
And another article you posted last week at the Washington Post concerns Hassan Whiteside, the Heat bringing him off the bench, and the results have been pretty good, some pretty impressive wins so far.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think everybody knows that he's probably one of the most dynamic centers in the game. If you look at, you know, his stat lines are ridiculous. He's, you know, already, I think, sniffing the all-time territory for triple doubles that include block shots. And, you know, he's really only played two full seasons in the NBA, you know, seasons that involve him playing a you know, a high portion of minutes. But what he's doing right now for the team, I think, is allowing their starters to play a certain brand of basketball that they weren't able to when he was on the court, you know, because obviously he's not really a get-out-and-transition type player. And they really have a lot of those pieces there when they go small with Dragic and Dang and Wade. They can get those three out on fast breaks. I think they know that there are some scoring opportunities there, and that they really can't play that brand of basketball when they're seemingly having to run pick and rolls with Whiteside. And, you know, furthermore, I think what he brings to the table is he can be the kind of the captain or the anchor of the defense for the bench. So that way, you know, when they're matched up against, you know, maybe lesser lesser capable offensive players, he can really, you know, defend the rim the way he always does, and you know, really help that that rotational defense do what it needs to do in order to get the starters back out on the court. I mentioned in the article that he's really, you know, playing a serious amount of minutes, even though he's coming off of the bench. It's not that, you know, he's being shoved to the wayside and then being told to pick up, you know, some crunch time minutes. He's really playing I would describe him as like the Manu Ginobili, albeit a more defensive presence of the Miami Heat, in that he's playing starter minutes, but just simply coming off the bench.
And Josh, a lot of times NBA players, especially even college players to some extent, they don't handle that not starting if they feel they're good enough to start very well. So it's laudable that he's able to do that and still contribute to that extent.
Well, I think that's the big conversation that's happening probably in Miami is, you know, he's a free agent this summer, and he's been known to have some personality quirks and, you know, maybe some issues with confidence off the court. Mm-hmm. So I know that he really vocalized how displeased he was with not making the All-Star game, you know, this season. Mm-hmm. And has had some issues in the past, you know, some issues that required, you know, Spoelstra to take action and to sit him down. So it'll be interesting to see if he, you know, really can buy into this veteran-heavy team and do what, you know, he needs to do rather than, you know, become a distraction off the court, because this team needs him to make a deep playoff run, and I think he needs them to, you know, raise his stock if he's looking to move elsewhere in the offseason. So, you know, if he can kind of temper maybe his feelings with being, you know, put in the secondary rotation, I think that'll probably be best for the franchise and for him moving forward.
Josh, appreciate it as usual. Again, we'll post links to the articles, and we'll chat with you in a couple of weeks, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
That is Josh Blanos. All right, due to travels with the Racers, no shows for the rest of the week. We'll try to get one out to you on Monday, but I'll be off next week as well. We'll explain that later on. It's work/vacation, but it's been terrific. Hopefully a lot to talk about on Monday's program. Enjoy your week, and go Racers!